Yes, absolutely.
So when you enter the world of iman and you have been attributed as mu'min, and now this iman itself has levels and grades.
Okay.
But the ones who are going to accompany Imam Ali Salam, those noble and specific and special companions of Imam, have the highest level of iman.
Mm-hmm.
The iman is that deep that has been institutionalized in their existence.
Like that of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam.
That's why exactly. Okay. That's, I mean, those companions of Imam Hussein, they said that they were sure that they will get martyred. I mean, they knew that they will not leave this army alive.
Yes.
So this iman is not an ordinary one. I mean, sometimes you attend a battle, but yes, you have a hope of, for example, get back to your family and be back, return to your family sometime and visit
them. Yes.
But the companions of Imam Hussein know, all of them, that tomorrow all of them will be martyred.
That's right.
Right?
That's why we say always, faithful companions of Imam al-Hussein.
Very true.
Yes, okay.
So this iman was very firm in the hearts of companions of Imam Hussein al-Hussein, and will be the same, because we have lots of hadith that likens the companions of Imam Hussein and Imam Mahdi alayhi salam. And I mean, even one aspect that they are usually compared to each other is this level of iman. But these people who are in the army of Imam and the special companions of Imam are benefited from the highest level of iman, and iman is very deep in their existence, and they have such kind of iman that nothing will shake them, that no obstacle can shake them when they are faced with.
Mm-hmm.
So
mean firm faith is per se.
Very
that's
true.
Right. Okay.
So that's why Imam Baqir alayhi salam, when he was describing these people, he said, Allahum المؤمنون حقا. That is, they are really and truly, they are mu'minin and believers.
Mm-hmm.
So all those attributes of mu'minun that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says in Al-Quran,
yes,
can be attributed to these people.
Mm-hmm.
That's why even it says there are the people that are the real monotheists, yes, who are worshipping Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Yes. The kind of iman that you are talking about is this.
Mm-hmm.
Imam Sadiq alayhi salam, again in hadith, says that their hearts, as we said earlier, is like pieces of iron and steel.
Yes.
There is no doubt in their heart. I mean, look, some of the people, even we had even among the mm-hmm. companions of early imams, I don't want to actually complain about any of the companions. Some of them, we saw in the history, some doubts came to their hearts for a single moment and it left.
Yes.
But in these people, mm-hmm. no doubt will enter, since their hearts are that strong and the iman is that established in their
hearts. Even in our hadith, we say that they are resembled to lions during the day, referring to their braveness of heart.
Very
and
true.
Worshippers during the night, who shed tears.
Okay. Very true. Yeah. So it goes without saying that this strongness of belief and iman helps them in the field of action, in the field of battle, in the field that they go. I mean, when we're talking about the field of battle or the field of action, it does not necessarily mean, that Imam is going to spread his revolution and uprising with, massacre or kill. No. When we are talking about the activity of these people and men and companion of Imam alayhi salam in the field of action, it does not necessarily mean it's going to be a fight or, battle. When the people, as we said earlier, when they hear the world, the world of fitrah, the world of nature, they automatically accept it.
Yes.
I mean, most of the places that the companions of Imam they go and spread the message,
that's right,
people automatically, they themselves come towards these people and they will accept.
So it is not necessarily going to be through physical power.
Very true. That's right. Okay. Though they have enough power to defend themselves and to actually spread this message. I want to say that kind of iman even actually influences the hearts of the people.
Mm-hmm.
It captures the hearts of the people. This iman that
this
they are
important.
Equipped with. I want to say that this iman that they are equipped with is even more important than the iron and the weapons that they are in need of. For example, in ordinary and let's say in ordinary wars that usually people are after. So through the power of iman, they are actually promoting the message of Imam Ali.
On the day of Ashura, very much you call up the story of Ashura day and the battle of Karbala. You know, all the faithful companions of Imam, when they were going to the battlefield, through their, as you said, spiritual strengths, they could fight so many people on that time.
Very true.
That's right. This is good. Okay, thank you very much, brother.
You're welcome.
Let's take our first break and then we'll continue our discussion, brother. Thank you very much.
You're
taking
welcome.
A break, I'm back in a minute.
مهديون في الأزمان شعظيه ربنا في العالمين أضفع له نور أليق والظالم ابتده من أجل السالكين أهدى سنه
سنه
مهديون في الأزمان شعظيه ربنا في العالمين أضفع له نور أليق والظالم ابتده من أجل السالكين أهدى سنه
سنه.
Welcome back, dear listeners of Arab English Radio, Call of Islam page. You're listening to the program, The Last Savior. I am Atal, the host of this program. Brother Arabian, so what other spiritual features can you enumerate for us for the special Sahabi or Ashab of Imam al-Mahdi?
The second spiritual feature and characteristic that we are going to talk about is purity and taqwa, purity and piety. One of the principles and let's say one of the pillars of management in a high level, in high organizations or in big and large organizations, is having this purity and piety. Because without this, I mean, you will be lacking. I mean, one of the pillars is shaking.
Yes.
It cannot find its ideal status. Because when, I mean, unlawful desires enter your work and your organizational mission, it will be in a mess, you know. That's why those people who are with Imam, these special companions, we have in a hadith that they are free from any corruption, any moral issues.
Yes.
They are men of taqwa and purity. Yes. They have worked on themselves. Mm-hmm. They have done self-building earlier.
Yes.
Self-building not in the sense of body self-building.
I know.
Self-building in the, they have spiritual worked on their... Yeah, the okay. self, yeah, spiritual, spiritual work on themselves.
Yes.
And in the work that they have accepted, I mean, they have no doubt and misconception. And they're trying to do their work in the best way possible. And there is no even a single or epsilon wrongness in their action, in their movement, in their
yes.
movement.
Okay.
That's why Imam Hassan al-Askari al-Islam defines them in this way, that they have come from a pure origin, mm-hmm. that is their fathers and
yes.
mothers, pure themselves, and
yes.
then these people came from this pure and beautiful origin, and their hearts is free from any hypocrisy and
yes.
any corruption, and their hearts is again free from any darkness.
Yes.
Again, Imam says that their hearts are very acceptable of religious teachings from the side of the Imam and from Allah's side.
Okay.
So they have accepted Imam and they have attached Islamic teachings, Islamic rulings, and they have...
They are all obedient.
They are
to
stepping
the
in this way.
Yes.
They are stepping ahead in this
okay.
way. So this is the definition that Imam Hassan yes. al-Askari gives to these people.
I can feel your eyes like the sun shining behind the clouds. I need a morning to shatter this long night forever. I need a hero to stop this thousand-year-old pain.
Taqwa itself, you know, needs lots of elaboration. What do you mean exactly by taqwa? Because some people might say that, okay, a person who does his obligations or wajibat is a muttaqi. But this is not so. You know, there are so many different details to become a muttaqi. You know?
Some of these features, when we are actually hearing about some of these attributes that have been
yes.
given and been described about the companions of Imam Ali, we have seen, brother, some of the people even in our time.
I yes.
mean, such people can be seen, and we have experienced, I mean, we witnessed in the war between, in the 8-year war that we
yes.
had.
They impose the Iraqi war in Iran, that's
people
right.
in our country and,
yes.
and even in the world. We
yes.
can witness here and there with some features. I mean, these features are not something that we can say they are far-fetched and no one can
mm-hmm.
be equipped with these features.
Yes.
Imam Sadiq alayhi salam says that يَمْسَحُ اللَّهُ بُطُونَهُمْ وَظُهُورَهُمْ فَلَا يُشْكِلْ عَلَيْهِمْ حُكْمٌ. Imam says that Allah with his hand, I mean, when we are talking about Allah's hand, it does not mean physical hand of Allah. No. Yadullah ma'al jama'ah, when we are talking about the hand of Allah, we are metaphorically talking about the hand of Allah.
Yes, the power of Allah. That's right.
Allah, by his hand, actually stretches on their back and on their bellies.
Yes.
Through this attention that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has towards them, there is nothing difficult on these people. Mm-hmm. So it means through Allah's attention and due to being a good servant of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, Allah also compensates for them. Because intansullah yansurkum. That is, if you help Allah, if you step ahead for the sake of Allah.
So they are always in a state of purity, isn't it?
A state of purity of tahara and taqwa.
The tahara, that's right. Okay.
So these are the people. And these people have no eye towards worldly desires and worldly attachments.
Yes.
And they have prepared themselves through a clean batin, clean inside.
Yes.
To work for this great mission, that is to assist the imam of the time, the promised imam that was the goal and the wish and the hope of all the other messengers of Allah in the course of history and the whole creation.
So they must be very special people. That's right.
This is something that the whole the people from day one were waiting for.
All humanity has been wishing for. Okay.
So Imam is the gist of these beauties and the gist of all these beauties, and he was the last hope of humanity. So these people should be.
Is it true that all these special deputies will do the salat behind Imam at every moment? I mean, for example, the Zuhr, Maghrib, so prayer, you know, behind Imam, is it true?
Actually, I have no idea on that. I haven't found any exact information on that. But since they are going to be in different areas and they are going to be given the mission to stand and to be in some areas, it means that the people should say prayers behind them. But at the beginning, when they are ready, I mean, when they join Imam Ali Islam in Baytullah al-Haram, there must be sort of, let's say, this company with them, such a company between them and Imam Ali Islam.
And this perfection of this Sahabi and companion of the Imams will gradually take place again and again too. I mean, this is not like the perfection the Imam himself has. These people are perfect, but this is going to be a gradual, more spiritual perfection during their deputyship, isn't it?
Exactly. I mean, let's not call them deputies of Imam, because
they're
going to
be companion.
I'm afraid they can be confused with the Nawab.
Okay.
Yes. They are the companions.
Yes.
Definitely, they came, I mean, when they are born, I mean, definitely are different with the an infallible who was born infallible. Like Jesus the Christ, when he was born, he was a prophet of the time. Imam Jawad al-Islam was an imam when he was born. Okay. But these people actually work on themselves and they prepare themselves to be and to get close to the borders of infallibility, that is, the borders of Asma, to be eligible to be at the service of Imam.
That's all right. Really high status, inshallah, given to the people who are qualified enough, and may Allah help us to understand the presence of Imam al-As during his reappearance. Thank you very much, Brother Alavio, for a nice elaboration regarding this topic. Really beautiful discussions. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.ir, Call of Islam page. Till another episode of the program, The Last Savior, God bless you and may Allah hasten the reappearance of Imam al-Mahdi Ajalallah.
Where is the rising sun? Where is the spring of life? Where is the shining moon? Where is the firmest glow? Please, oh please, please come.
Killings of journalists. Part 1. Being a journalist, regardless of nationality, is a job that is full of dangers and obstacles. It is also the job of truth seekers. The Palestinian journalist is destined
to live within the walls of these violations. But despite these hard conditions, he or she still has determination, boldness, persistence, and strength.
The reality is that Palestinian journalists have a double suffering. On one hand, they are part of the Palestinian people who are subject to crimes and violations that qualify to genocide and war crimes. On the other hand, they have a dangerous job, especially in this hard environment under which Palestinians live because of the occupation. The Gaza Strip is besieged, while in the West Bank there is the apartheid wall, settlements, Judaization of Jerusalem, frequent violations and arrests. This affects the entire Palestinian society, and especially the journalists, as the occupation wants to black out the truth and their violations of human rights, as well as the state terrorism it practices. The Israeli occupation practiced all sorts of humiliation and subjugation methods on journalists. But along the years, the Palestinian journalist refused becoming a tool in the hands of the occupation and Israeli intelligence. And this made journalists sacrifice a lot. The Palestinian journalist plays a role as significant as that of the Palestinian politician or the fighter. To each his role. We have always seen the Palestinian journalist in the field. He would use his cameras and other tools to perform heroic and honorable achievements. He would always document and publicize the suffering of the Palestinian people, especially in the besieged Gaza Strip. He would always show the world the suffering, the incursions, the killing and torture Palestinians suffer on the hands of the Israeli occupation.
This boldness made the Israeli occupation army not differentiate between a journalist and another. So everyone is targeted and everyone is wanted.
Regardless of their nationality, journalists pursue finding the truth, removing injustice, and unveiling crimes of the occupation, no matter who that occupation may be. We have seen examples for that where reporters for networks in the United States and Europe expose crimes committed by the U.S. and other countries. An exception to this is the few journalists who are affiliated with their government, no matter who that government may be. Such journalists have a questionable credibility and are renounced in their communities. Journalists who come to Palestine are our colleagues and friends. We have to help them, and the Israeli occupation has to respect their freedom of movement and work, like it respects our freedom. But unfortunately, the Israeli occupation, as you know, does not respect any kind of freedom, and it continues its violations against these journalists. The Israeli occupation does not differentiate between a Palestinian and a non-Palestinian journalist. The non-Palestinian journalist tries to document the events as they are, so the Israeli occupation relentlessly targets them and any other journalist who tries to document events on the ground without discrimination. The Palestinian journalist works in an area rich with events. There are incursions and airstrikes all the time, and as a journalist tries to cover these crimes, he will be a target to the Israeli occupation. The Israeli occupation does not want the journalist to succeed in covering these violations, because any footage that comes out of the Gaza Strip exposes the Israeli occupation's army. That is why, in the beginning of any incursion, they fire and attack journalists to get them away from the action zone so they cannot document these incursions or any targeting of civilians. Therefore, if they injure the journalist, he would be taken to the hospital and there will be no one to document the events, so the occupation army can do whatever they want. If journalists were there, this means there were witnesses on the crime. There are no witnesses on the crime as long as there are no journalists. Palestinian journalists have been subject to a variety of violations that reach the killing in cold blood. Other violations include arrest and detention for extended periods, especially the administrative detention with no accusation, as well as confiscation of their media coverage badges, especially in the West Bank. Journalists face continuous violations similar to the case during their coverage of the war on Gaza or the usual occupation's incursions to the Palestinian areas. Many of them were injured while covering the events, and some of these injured journalists lost their ability to perform their job.
Assassination of journalists in general is part of the repulsive occupation because Palestinian journalists actually like the job, which unveils the ugly face of the occupation, and have determination and persistence. The Israeli occupation just assassinates them. They kill them to kill the truth. This is how the occupation envisions killing and assassinating them.
During the attack on Jabalia, there was an incursion in Esbat Abu Drabbu right behind us. We were covering the incursion on the first and second day. It seems that the Israeli occupation army did not like our movement in the area, so they fired at us multiple times. But we continued documenting this crime. I was standing right here when the tanks advanced a little further. They saw me, and right away one of the tanks fired a shell directly towards me. After I was taken to the hospital, I was surprised that the shell also hit other people and they were killed. When I woke up and became conscious, I realized that my best friend and the rest of the team were also injured. After that, we went back to the field and continued working. These violations and targeting of journalists are not going to stop us from doing our work. By the way, this building we are in right now was hit and targeted by the Israeli occupation during the war on the Gaza Strip. Other colleagues were on the roof of this building and were targeted as well while covering the events. However, none of us, the journalists, our colleagues who were targeted, their families, or even the Palestinian Authority took judicial action. So there is weakness or failure in this side. We have to encourage families of victims, civil society organizations, the journalist syndicate, and the Palestinian Authority to take judiciary action against the Israeli occupation's war criminals. These Israeli war criminals should not remain unpunished. We can generally say that these violations frequently committed by the Israeli occupation against Palestinian journalists are evidence that it tries to cover the truth and isolate Palestine from its surrounding. The occupation isolated the Gaza Strip through the siege and isolates the West Bank from time to time. Despite all these hardships, Palestinian journalists played their role in delivering the message and suffering of Palestinian people, as well as documenting the violations that exposed the Israeli occupation. Therefore, the camera was able to expose the organized terrorism, war crimes, and crimes against humanity committed by the Israeli occupation.
Oh,
Claims were filed on the issue of targeting journalists, especially those from Al-Aqsa Association, but procrastination has always prevailed in these cases. There were also claims by local and international organizations, but these also were put aside, especially the ones regarding Al-Aqsa Association. The justification given most of the time, among others, was that a counterclaim of the one presented is filed. This is evidence that there are restrictions on journalists and their claims, especially those from Al-Aqsa Association. The Israeli occupation is a renegade state practicing state terrorism according to the international humanitarian law. However, the balance of powers with the United States hegemony blocks any attempts to sue the Israeli occupation in the United Nations, especially in the Security Council. Using Article 7 of the international law would force the Israeli occupation to subdue and abide to the international conventions and the international humanitarian law. When the issue on the table concerns an Arab country or so, the United Nations decisions are enforced immediately, and forces like UNIFIL would deploy to employ decisions of the Security Council. In the Palestinian case, everything is pending and no serious sanctions were enforced to prevent the Israeli occupation from committing more crimes against Palestinians, and this provides a shield for the occupation to carry on.
I'm a teacher.
I'm a researcher.
I'm a mother.
I'm a lawyer.
And I believe in acting kindly toward you, because you are...
A Muslim lady.
You are very special. There's no one just like you. You are very special. And I'm so glad you're mine.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of Arab English Radio, old ladies from all around the world. Welcome back to your own program, Muslim Lady. This is Asma. I have the honor to be your host once again. Yes, welcome to your own program. As usual, we're going to talk about the issues that are related to all the women out there. And in today's episode, we have Sister Nahid with us to help us with the topics. Assalamu alaikum, sister, and welcome.
Assalamu alaikum to you and all your dear listeners. I'm so glad and pleasure to be here with you.
Thank you very much for being here. How are you doing?
Good. Everything is going okay.
So that's perfect. Well, and we're in the holy month of Ramadan, so I ask everybody not to forget us from their prayers. Previously on Muslim Lady, we talked about the factors and important items that are very much crucial for every girl to take into notice and consideration before they get into the decision for marriage. Like, we went through the compatibility, like family approval, just I'm counting the things I remember. And right now, I guess there are some more of these factors that we can talk about.
Yeah, sure. The first factor for today, which I'm gonna start with, is taking into account the cultural differences between the couples. Mm-hmm. Like, what I believe in is that both girl and boy, and especially girls, because sometimes based on their own nature, girls act at that moment, like act spontaneously without considering the side effects, like the factor that is very important, and sometimes we don't even think about it, is the cultural differences within the family, within the society. And most importantly, if people are from the different areas, like different locations, different countries.
Yeah, that's very true. And that's why in Islamic heritage, when they come to talk about marriage, as for girls, to support the girls, they say that the father's approval is very important.
Yeah.
Once when we were younger, actually, we had a problem with this. Why? Girls cannot decide for themselves. And then I remember we had a professor at a school. She came to just open it up for us to tell us why the fathers have to give their approval for the girl's marriage. And then she said that this is for the girl's benefit. Like, maybe you as girls are too emotional spontaneously, just as you said, you're going to make a decision. But your fathers are more experienced. They are men and they know their folk better. So maybe this is going to protect you from the consequences. Like if you do not see things in a clear vision, your parent, specifically your father, is going to see things much more clearer.
And another thing is that it was at the time of the, I guess, the first years that feminism was being highlighted in the world.
Yeah.
At that time, people used to just disagree with all the rules and every rule that consisted of men, father, I don't know, brother.
Exactly.
The opposite gender.
Yeah.
And that was completely leading the society towards these negative ideas for like men and fathers.
Exactly.
And I really agree that the father's approval, we're going to talk about the family approval later on as well. But going back to the cultural differences, another thing that I forgot to mention is this. When we say that girls need to be aware of the cultural differences, we're not necessarily talking about the fact that they shouldn't marry a person if the other person is from another place, like another country. What I am talking about is that girls should be aware of these differences.
Yeah.
They should get to know each other's background, like the cultural background of the boy who is from another country, whom the father and the parents of the girl have approved. And we need to know the information about the other person. If everything was going okay, there is no problem, no barrier. Even in Islam, we have no barriers towards marriage. As we had even some tribal positions at the time of our imams for the marriage.
Exactly.
But they disagreed and they took a stand against these kinds of beliefs.
At this very moment, let's go for a short break and then we'll be back. Yes, it's very important to understand the reality the way it is. It's exactly the thing that we're talking about right in here in today's Muslim Lady. That is, you must get into all the decisions that you make with an open eye. Yes, welcome back. This is Muslim Lady. Sister Nahid and I were talking about different factors that are important for us to make a perfect decision for marriage if we are to get into that decision.
Yeah, after talking about the cultural differences, as you previously mentioned, we need the family approval.
Yeah.
Like, we need our parents, the previous generation who has experienced ups and downs of life to agree with the big decision that the girl or boy, especially the girl with her emotional status, is making. And we need their ideas, we need their cancellation, and we need to take into account what they are considering as important. I guess last month, I heard bad news about one of my friends. Yeah, it was about my friend who is just studying for PhD. She's a successful girl.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard that she is divorced. While, she has a 2-year-old son.
Oh
and
my
it
God.
it was just a big shock for me. But when I talked to her, I asked her for the reasons of this this big shock. She just told me that my education and career goals didn't match my husband's. Like, he disagreed with me going to university a lot. He didn't want me to be in this major. He was okay with just studying, with going to work, but he didn't match my expectations, and I couldn't match his expectations, meet his expectations. From that time, I'm just thinking of this very important factor of career and goal, and goals in like education. Like, we need to know each other's careers well,
yeah,
the education well, and even the goals well. Like, where am I going to be in the next 5 years?
Mm-hmm.
Is my partner going to agree with me or not?
I think it has got a lot to do with how supportive the other person is going to be.
Yeah, but first of all, their mental ideas, you know, are they even okay with the major I'm studying? Is the person going to be fine with me studying for, I don't know, PhD? Not not being home for about maybe at least 5 hours a day for studying homework, the one who gets hurt a lot is the girl.
Even if they quit out of love, then it has got nothing to worry about. But then the problem starts when they do this as an obligation.
Yeah.
When they do this as if they have been forced to do it.
Yeah,
and like if you become a mother and then you quit your job, you would never feel regretful for whatever you did because that's the thing you did out of love.
Yeah.
But when it comes to force, then the story goes to different directions.
Yeah, and the impacts it will have will never be compensated. Like
Sure, that's very true.
That's why the next factor I wanted to mention was the education and career goals. We need to get to know each other well. Mm-hmm. We need to just have everything clear between the both of us.
And something not to forget, just as you were saying, sometimes at the very beginning of their journey into marriage, the boys usually would say that, okay, I will do this, I will do that. They give you promises like in Neverland, the promises that are never going to happen. But then you have to take these things into consideration as well. When you are talking about future, try to be so honest with each other.
Yeah, exactly.
Honesty is so important.
And having counselors around, you know, these days we have too many sessions that I've heard they completely analyze each person's mindset and then
You mean to meet a psychologist and then they... I have heard about that as well. Yeah. Then they would draw the tree of their brain, I guess, something like that.
They kind of analyze the person's mindset and
personality.
If they're lying.
And then to recognize if the two of them can match or not.
Yeah, there will be some effects that can never be forgotten.
Exactly. Just let's go for a short break and a change of mood, and then we'll be back.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Muslim Lady.
Welcome back. Still, you're listening to Muslim Lady. Well, we're talking about different factors to have a perfect marriage. But then I must remind you again of this very point that marriage is a multidimensional issue that would happen in anyone's life. As for girls, since we're talking to ladies and girls out there, the situation might get even worse because us as girls have got this emotional side that goes beyond what every other person sees. So another important factor that I would love to add is to control your emotions, because I see a lot of girls who would just get into marriage with their heart, not with their mind.
That is somehow connected to the emotional maturity.
We discussed that.
Yeah, and we need girls to just be aware of their emotions. When they know their emotions well, again, also we can, you know, these factors are kind of connected to each other. They're like a circle. If you have enough information before marriage, you can control your emotions well because you know yourself and your own nature, like the nature of a girl with her own mindset, with her own brain that is sometimes too emotional.
Exactly.
It's like sometimes the heart decides and even the brain just goes with the flow. And we need to have the information over ourselves to be able to control.
Exactly. It's nothing wrong with being emotional, of course. To decide with your heart is something so lovely. But then, as you just said it, we must take this into consideration that it's the thing that exists between the heart and the mind. And there must be always a balance between these two. Like, we know girls better because we're girls, and we know how it is to live with a heart that goes so wild.
Yeah.
And the last factor.
Yeah, the last, not the least, is the support system. What I'm going to highlight here is somehow related to the problems after marriage. I mean, after the big decisions, because the previous factors were too important. They were the most important factors that were leading to that.
After the bygones are the bygones.
Yeah. And here we are mentioning the support system that needs to be there for the couples. Like, are they going to be supported by the family, by friends?
Yeah,
by,
this is very important.
By the community, by the society, even by the country that they are living in. These days we are hearing a lot about the loans for marriage and these kinds of stuff. But still, we can see that sometimes the couples are not supported well.
Just as you brought up the story of support, I do agree. Yes, support is very important. But then let's have a look on the other side of the story as well. There are so many couples who are suffering from this independence issue. Like, if you go to the girl will tell you that my husband is not independent from his parents or family. This is also another important factor. Like, when you are going to marry, the important thing about the other person, I guess, is how independent they are.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's like, again, going back to the issue of keeping a balance between
exactly.
the two. Like, we're not
moderation.
Saying, exactly. We're not saying that the boy and girl should be, like, separated from their families, like, totally independent.
Exactly.
But what we are seeking is the boy and the girl having their own status in their own world, at the same time being still connected to the community, to friends and to family.
Yeah.
We really need this support system for them to be prepared, to be thought about, to be logical. Because, sometimes it's not about the boy not keeping the balance between life and, parents. Sometimes it's even the parents' issue, right?
Yeah, it's
they're
the
not keeping
issue.
The balance. They're just making the boy or girl be too much dependent on them. So we need it like a system, like a way that keeps everything in at a normal level.
Try to have this in mind that you must keep your expectations as low as possible. Now, this is not unfortunate to say it. I guess this is reality. This is facing the reality. Sometimes we just build castles in the air and we forget about the very fact that life is a real thing in a common world. So just try to have a clear vision of this world and how it works and how human beings are. Do not think of the other person as this angel who's coming from heaven, doing no mistakes, doing no wrong thing. They have no wrong attitude. No, it's not like that. And life is never a peachy pinky story sort of a thing. So thank you, Sister Nahid, for contributing in here in today's episode. And thank you to our listeners. I hope you enjoyed it, dear ladies. Until another session, I just bid you farewell. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
I know I'm waiting, waiting for something, something to happen to me. This waiting comes with trials and challenges. Nothing in life is free.
Everyone has a beloved, a new dear friend. But I have you, my dear. May God protect you, my dear. May God protect you.
IRIB English Radio, for those who seek the truth.
This is Back to Reality.
Back to Reality. Back to
it's the show where we discuss the most topical of topics, the most controversial of controversies, and the most important affairs of affairs.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of Arab English Radio. Welcome back to a new episode of Back to Reality. Well, this is me, Asma. Once more, I have the pleasure to be at your service. And then here with me, I have two very dear guests. Assalamu alaikum, Brother Mustafa, and assalamu alaikum, Sister Nahid.
Walaikum
assalam.
I would love you both to introduce yourself pretty briefly.
My name is Nahid, and I'm so honored to be with you and your listeners today.
Thank you very much for being here, and your brother Mustafa.
My name is Mustafa, and I'm studying here in the Hauza. I'm studying psychology here, and I'm originally from Pakistan, but I've lived in different countries.
So, thank you very much, both of you, for coming here and for joining us in today's episode. So, let me go so straight into the question that what would you do for the happiness of the people around you?
Be happy myself, I guess.
you be happy for the happiness of other people?
Well, it depends. What exactly are you asking? You know, what point of view are you asking me from?
And there are different perspective to it, actually. First, you tell me your impression totally of the question that you're being asked. Like, whenever you want to make people happy, would you go to different extremes to make people happy? Like your family, your friends?
Of course, you know, there's this very popular saying in English, which is, you know, you can't make everyone happy, right?
You're not a Nutella jar.
So life isn't always that way. But I think in order to be happy ourselves and to help others, it's just to be as sort of maybe as nice to people as you can, you know, have good manners, for example. Those are things which will help you be better and help others feel happy as well.
So what about you, sister?
First of all, I also believe in that quote that you can't please everyone and it's impossible to do. But there are too many ways based on the different situations. Like, I don't know, if I want to make one of my family members happy, I know what that person likes, then I can do that for her.
So you would do everything to make other people happy?
Not everything, but the thing that makes them happy, like, I have the limits as well.
There are borderlines.
Yeah, sure. But there should
be. But we would make other people happy.
If we consider the society, there are too many ways, like, I don't know, charity, the things that are even regarded and suggested in our religion. But considering the family, regarding the borderlines, thinking of the things that would make them happy, I can do them for them. Like, I don't know, buying gifts, doing the thing that they like. Or even sometimes providing them with their favorite stuff.
Yeah. So generally speaking, what are the things that would make human beings happy?
So I think a lot of times we do, like, you know, especially in a family environment, I think many times we do have to make sacrifices to make our family happy, right? For example, let's say I'm washing the dishes to help, you know, my wife, right? I may not like doing that, but I feel like that's necessary so that I can help her and that will make her happy at the end of the day, right?
Yeah.
So a lot of times we do have to do things which may not necessarily please us, but we know it helps them. But you'll see that person will then also return that, you know, favor as well.
I just asked what makes human beings happy and I want to know your answer.
When we devote time and when we think about them and they see this courage in ourselves, they see that we are working for them and for their good, this can really help our life, our personal life, our, I don't know, social life to be moving forward.
We do make people happy because we have relationships and it's just a two-way sort of a relationship.
It's part of our personality. Like,
we have to give it to get it.
Yeah.
But,
so,
you know, at times it's not always a two-way street, right? For example, like, let's say you have to, like, do something that your parents are asking you to do. You may not be getting anything in return out of that. You just have to do it, right? Or maybe, like, say you're at work for your employer. Sometimes you're just going to have to do things. I mean, I know you're getting, like, compensation out of it, but still, like, it's not always, like, a two-way street. Sometimes you do have to be sacrificing for others. And even in Islam, I think we have this concept that you should really be doing it for the sake of God's happiness.
Yeah,
right?
Not your intention is very important.
Right? You know, others may not always treat you well, may not always get what you want out of them, for example. But if you're doing it for the sake of God, then He will give you that happiness and peace.
Yeah,
right?
But there is this wrong notion among people that if you're a kind person, that if you wish everyone to be happy, then they would call you a people pleaser. Now, let's go for a break and then just think about it. After the break, give me your answers.
This is IRIB English Radio.
You're listening to Back to Reality.
So, welcome back. This is Back to Reality. You're listening to IRB English Radio. I am Asma. Sister Nahida and Brother Mustafa are helping us with the topic of kindness, doing everything to make other people happy. By the way, not every single person in this world would have the same perspective that, okay, I have to do everything to make everyone happy. I asked about the people pleaser label that sometimes would be attached to you as a person in society. Like, you're so kind and you have too much of sympathy and empathy with people. You would do things like whether it's compensation or sacrifice, but you would do things for people to make them happy. Still, you're going to be called the people pleaser.
First of all, I guess we should know the borderline between being the victim of the other people or being kind to them. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, I have seen too many people that are just being too much kind to the other people that they are not being seen. Even the other person doesn't see the good actions or the good deeds of the person. But not going forwards from that borderline, staying kind, I guess that's not a problem.
How can you recognize that border, like between being a victim?
That is the thing that makes it too challenging, and that is the point that makes people think, like, in a toxic way, that you are being the person who is not getting the things that person has given.
Because you know what I mean? I mean, generally speaking, you don't understand that people are looking at you like that unless you get to the very last straw. Like, it's the ending point, and you figure out that people are just thinking that whatever you do, like, as if they're the center of the world and everybody has to...
Yeah, I think one way, sometimes you can tell people are taking advantage of your being nice and kindness, you know, in the sense that they will abuse or misuse, you know, you're being nice. I think in those situations, you definitely want to be more assertive. You want to be, you know, you have your sort of, have confidence in understanding yourself. So this is very much related to understanding ourselves and the world. It reminds me of a really beautiful discussion that we had with one of our teachers. So the class is about crisis management, you know, what happens during crisis management. So our teacher was saying there's four dimensions to us. If any one of these four dimensions, we don't understand it well, we're going to be suffering, right? And he says, one is our own self, how we define our own self. Second is how we define others in the world. Third is how we define, like, where we came from. You know, what's our source, which is obviously God. And the final is, you know, where we're going to end up, right? Day of judgment or, you know, heaven, hell, all that kind of. So he said, if any one of these four is missing from someone's life, they're not going to have a very good life. All of our interactions, all of our how we view life. Yeah.
And our own priorities, like, we shouldn't forget about ourselves. And people really forget their own needs, wants, and just consider life as their own mission to help other people and please them. If we set our priorities, if we devote some time for others, know that it's our duty to help the people around us, but at the same time, have ourselves too, have our own needs and wants as well, and value them.
That's very important, to have a moderation between yourself and the world around you. So it's good to be nice, and we have been asked and recommended to be nice and kind to other people, but then there is an extreme to that. It has got some borders. You should not forget about yourself and about your borders, so everything must be considered. So I guess we have to go for another break, and then we'll be back to see what's going on next. There actually are a lot of psychological questions to figure out what kind of a person you are. Everybody has a definition for kindness for these sort of human being sort of relationships that they have in this world. Like, we all see kindness differently. Maybe someone is going to do you something wrong, but they're doing it based on their own analysis. Like they have brought everything together and then they have come to this conclusion that, okay, this is going to be for your benefit. Yeah.
And they don't assume it as something bad. Like they don't think they're being kind to you.
Mm. So I guess nowadays the definition of everything is changing. Like people are no longer looking at kindness the same way as they looked at it maybe 20 years ago. Like everything is different. Now people would understand each other more and more, I guess.
Yeah, you know, and if you really want to understand that, I think we should refer to the best role models that we have, you know, from the Prophet and from the Imams. They really talk about these things, about how to be kind to others. There's a book called Mafatihul Hayat, the keys to life. And, you know, in that, there's so many advices related to these
kind of things. So much of details that are very nice.
It's actually a show on IRIB radio, so you can actually listen to it in your own time where they talk about keys to life.
Exactly.
I was reading that book and I was really sometimes astonished to the level. For example, like in one of those places, the Imam says that, you know, you have to, like, half of your faith is tolerating others, for example.
Yeah.
Yes. Right? So being kind sometimes involves tolerating others. It doesn't mean you have to actually go out and do something
for
them. You just have to be able to tolerate, like not lose your temper. That could be kindness, right? Being silent sometimes is a form of being kind.
Exactly.
I notice that, for example, with my own kids, like when they're fighting or they're, you know, making me angry, being silent is the best form of kindness I can do to them, right? So it really depends on, I think one thing we didn't mention is that each person has their own needs, right? Like kids have their own needs. Like, for example, our wife, our parents, our husband, for example, they have their own needs. If you recognize those needs and you behave in that manner towards them, you can be kind towards them while, you know, you're fulfilling their needs. Mm-hmm. I think that's really important, fulfilling other people's, like, basic, like, psychological, physical, whatever needs those are.
Yeah.
Those are important.
Because we're responsible toward each other. So to that extreme, yes, we have to care for each other's happiness. Like, I can do everything to make my parents happy. But again, there's that point that you mentioned, which is I should not go to this very extreme of forgetting about myself and defining the entire world based on other people's happiness.
Yeah.
Like, this is going to be wrong.
We have to define our own world first and then do the subjective things, because the ideas are also different. Like, maybe I regard something as a kindness towards the people around me, while you may not do the same as well.
Yeah.
So first we should define our own world, prioritize our own life, and at the same time keep the idea that we are supposed to be kind towards people around us. And we should also know that the definitions are subjective.
Of course, yeah. And that's self.
Are the definitions subjective, though?
Yeah, for kindness, sure.
Oh, maybe. Well, I was meaning for kindness, but you, before that, you're saying we have to understand ourselves, right? And, and going back to the thing that I mentioned from our teacher, that if we have an incorrect understanding of ourselves or the world or those things, then we're going to have problems, right?
Yeah, when the focus is on self, that's a problem.
Maybe. I mean, like I said, it depends on when.
Yeah.
There are times when you do have to focus on yourself, and then there's times when you have to focus. So it all depends on the situation and having a correct definition of things, right? If you don't have a correct definition of things, you're going to struggle in other parts of your life.
No, by subjective, I don't mean that the definitions can be wrong. I mean, the definitions based on our lives differ. Like, your life has different aspects, mine has different as well.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So, the only thing which is so important is that we should not feel like we are the center of this world and every other thing is circling around us. This is very wrong. So, whenever you're sharing your kindness or your empathy or sympathy, whatever, don't just feel like that. We are a single human being in a large system of other human beings who are all working together, and we have interactions. We have responsibilities, and we have been asked by God to be kind to other human beings. That's all. But then we have to consider the borders and the extremes as well. Thank you for your cooperation, and thank you, dear listeners, for staying with us until another session. I bid you farewell. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
يا الله يا رب العالمين يا رحمن يا رحيم يا ربي
تهدي أمه رايزك
يا الله
يا رب العالمين يا رحمن يا رحيم يا ربي التي أمه رايزك لتصي دلعتك once again.
Exposé. Tonight on Exposé, Joe Biden and Benjamin Netanyahu turn up the heat in their staged public feud over Zionist Israel's genocidal war in Gaza, as Netanyahu vows to defy any call for canceling the Rafah invasion. Now, leftist politicians and media figures go into a complete social media meltdown after former President Donald Trump said there would be a bloodbath if he is not elected in November. And finally, a Politico Ipsos new poll shows that half of the country in the United States of America believes Trump is a guilty man and should go to trial before the 2024 presidential election. Welcome to Exposé, the show that leaves no stone unturned. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is set to defy U.S. President Joe Biden's warning not to launch a major military